When God says, let no man say, then we need to be aware of the prohibition that he makes. When the scriptures say, let no man say, then we know that we're looking at some information that applies to every human being. Paul wrote in the book of Romans about sin and guiltiness and said, let all the world become guilty before God. And that's without exception. We cannot excuse ourselves from the guilt of sin. And here James writes, let no man say. And whatever it is, no man should say it. If God says, let no man say, then I would encourage no one to say that. It's a strong prohibition. Let no man say. And this is the statement that's made in verse 13 of chapter 1 of the book of James. Let no man say, when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it brings forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. We realize from our study last week and this week that there is a testing. And as I stated, Peter refers to it as a fiery trial. Paul wrote of it using a word that's translated tribulation that means to be in a very narrow strait, where you just simply don't have any room to move in any direction, and therefore telling us of its intensity. They create a lot of pressure. They create a lot of pain. But we have to understand that every unpleasant event that comes in our life is not the kind of testing or temptation that James speaks of in verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. Every unpleasant thing that happens to me and you in this world cannot be called this diverse temptation. And James realized that there would be people who would look at every bad thing that ever happened to them and they would call it a trial from God. And James then identifies and he sets forth not only the things that constitute a trial by illustration, such as the poor becoming rich and the rich becoming poor, but he also points out that there are some things that come upon us because of our own failure to stand true to God, and as a result of our being human beings with a sinful nature. And I think this is really a message that a lot of our world needs right now, because I guess we could entitle it Placing Blame Where Blame Belongs. Now, here's a person who's in the hospital, not able to walk, whose health is failing, and they may be, in fact, never allowed to go home again, never live a normal life. We look at them and ask them what has occurred that they have been brought to this place in life. And they tell us that society has let them down. The educational system has let them down. That they started using crack cocaine and that caused addiction. And in this addicted circumstance, they robbed a store, and while it was robbing the store, someone shot them and severed a spinal cord, and now they're unable to walk, and they're losing their health, and And well, whose fault is it? And that person will say it's society's fault. They didn't recognize that I was having problems. There was no special program for me in the neighborhood where I grew up. There was no one to recognize that I was at risk. There was no money available to get a program to save me from drug addiction. And so I'm here because of the failure of my local government. I'm here because of the failure of a president. I'm here because of the failure of a school system. And people just constantly blame everybody else. And our educational system and our psychological counseling and whatever kind it may be is generally oriented toward you're not at fault for what's happened to you. You don't blame yourself. It's somebody else's fault. It's your mother's fault. It's your daddy's fault. It's your grandpa's fault. But it's not your fault, that's for sure. And here James fixes blame where blame belongs. And I think before we can solve a lot of our problems as a nation, we need to fix blame where blame belongs. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. The word tempted here can be used in two senses, a good sense or a bad sense. In verse 2 of chapter 1, it's used in a good sense. In this particular verse, it's used in a bad sense, and it means to tempt to sin. When the ill event occurs in our life, if it comes because we have sinned, we cannot legitimately and truthfully say it is a test from God. And it's based on this irrefutable principle. For God cannot be tempted with evil. That is, it is impossible for God Almighty to lust. It is impossible for God Almighty to covet. It is impossible for God Almighty to lie. It is impossible for God Almighty to be any of the things that we consider to be temptations to sin. God's nature is good, not evil. God doesn't lack anything, so he doesn't have to rob anybody or lie to anybody. He doesn't have to steal anything. God is complete within himself. Doesn't depend upon any other creature for anything, and therefore there's nothing that God need do to get something that he doesn't have because he possesses all things. But God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man with evil. That is, God is not tempted to lie, and God isn't going to tempt you to lie. God is not tempted to lust, and therefore he's not going to tempt you with lust, that is, with covetousness and things of this nature. So any time that you feel in your heart a desire to lie or to cheat, commit adultery, any of these vices, any of these sins, don't say God is tempting me to do this, because he isn't. He doesn't sin. He doesn't tempt men to sin. And then he continues. And he points out that evil that is in all of us, because we're sons of Adam, and because we're sinners by nature, the evil that is in man is the place where evil tempts. Evil tempts us inside of us where there is evil. But every man is tempted, same word. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. The word drawn away means to be hurried away, to be sort of escorted out of the way. And every man is drawn away. That is, he moves from his position to another position because of his own lust. Now, this word really means desire which attaches itself to or upon an object. It is sinful desire that corresponds to man's depraved nature. Now, every man is tempted to sin, okay? Put that word in there. When he is drawn away of his own lust and entice. That is, he gives in to an enticement. And the enticement here is literally the bait that is used to catch a fish, or bait that is used to lure an animal into a trap, or bait that is used to lure anyone into a net. When we are tempted to sin, our attention is called to that sin because of lust. Now that our attention is given to that sin because of lust, we then practice that sin because we're enticed. Now here's a fish, just being a fish. And suddenly some fisherman lowers a line and there's a worm. And the fish looks at it, and he looks at it because a hunger that's in him, which is like lust, a desire that is innate in him, like lust. And then he just goes over and takes it. But the worm is the enticement. He wouldn't have done it if he hadn't have been enticed. Here's a net. Here's bait. Fish swim for the bait. They get entrapped. Here's an animal on his usual runs. There's the trap. There's the bait. He's in the trap. Why? Because he went for the bait. Now God lays out a progression of things here. And obviously the main thing that we ought to learn is that we ought to stop whenever we feel that lust. We ought to cut the whole thing off right then. We ought to simply back away from it right then rather than being drawn away. That's where sin needs to be stopped, is in its initial stage. That's where it's easiest to deal with. There is the lust, and then there's the bait. And then in verse 15, then when lust hath conceived. And this word conceived literally has in it the idea of a female conceiving. So he moves to another figure of speech to show us how this all happens. There's lust. We move away from our path. Then we see bait, we take the bait, and now when lust hath conceived, so now we get into the idea of a female conceiving. Passion conceives and gives birth to sin. Lust becomes pregnant. That's literally what it means. Our lust actually becomes expectant or pregnant. And in order for that to happen, because our will is involved, there is an act that actually impregnates the lust, or it would never continue. So when sin is in the lust stage, if we don't impregnate it, if we don't give it life, it'll die right there. But if we follow our lust, if we take the bait, then lust becomes pregnant. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth, or literally gives birth to sin. And the word here for sin just means all kinds of sins. What have we got now? Well, we've got the picture of lust getting pregnant and bearing a product or child, and that product is sin. All right, does it stop there? No. And sin, when finished, brings forth death. James continues this word picture. When sin then is finished, that means when it comes to full completion. That is, this sin that we gave birth to grows up and becomes mature. And what is the mature fruit of sin? It is death. It brings forth, bears young. It ceases being pregnant and gives birth. And sin, when fully matured, gives birth to death. And that's the cycle. It may take a long time. You know, we may take a long time for us to give in to our lust. And lust that doesn't conceive is not going to bring forth death. It's not going to bring forth sin, and the sin then bring forth death. There is a sin in lusting, but there is also the fact that we live in a world and we're tempted, and we're tempted when we're drawn away of our own lust, and then this process begins and completes this cycle. And I think you can see that in the life of David. James says, "Do not err, my beloved brother." What's he mean? He says, don't take the bait. That's literally what he's saying. Don't take the bait. Do not err, which has in it the idea of being led astray. Whenever you feel that lust, then there's going to be somewhere close to it bait. Don't take the bait. That's what James advises these people. Do not take the bait. Now, when you study the life of David, you know, you see David, he's loafing, okay? Really, he should have been in battle. He was the king, and kings are to lead their troops in battle. But here David was actually loafing around while his men were in battle. He had all of his captains in place and his leaders in place, all of this. And while he's just loafing, he sees Bathsheba on a housetop, very beautiful woman, and he lusts after her. He looks, and he continues to look until his looking has finally caused lust. And David takes her for his own. He commits murder. He lies, he cheats, he demoralizes his army. And then there's all kinds of serious problems that develop in his family with the death of his little boy or his son. And you can see in this cycle completing itself. David took the bait. When the children of Israel were in Ai, and here's a man who saw a goodly wedges of gold, a goodly Babylonish garment. That was the bait. He took the bait and plunged Israel into defeat and actually brought forth death because his family was stoned to death. So the message is not everything that's happening to us is a trial. Some of it is a result of our lust. And this lust can bring forth serious problems in our lives. When it is ultimately finished, the end product of it is death. So what? Do not err, my brethren. Do not take the bait. Now, in all of our hearts, even as saved people, there's still the Adamic nature. And all out in the world, there is the lust of the eye, the things that catch our attention, the things we would want. And they're the bait. But don't take the bait. Because if you do, you're going to have serious problems in your life. You're going to be in jail. You're going to be embarrassed. You're going to be humiliated. You're going to have a wreck. You're going to kill somebody. You're going to kill yourself. It's just all going to happen eventually. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. It's there. It's going to happen. It's inevitable. So, do not take the bait. You know, there are a lot of laws about entrapment. And for a long time, we looked at entrapment as illegal. But you know, the court systems don't look at it that way anymore. Now they can take cocaine and they can offer it to you and tell you, wouldn't you like to buy this cocaine? Wouldn't you like to have this drug? And just hang it out before you and offer it to you at an unbelievable price and just hold it there until you finally say, yeah, I'll take it. And then when you take it, they arrest you. And it stands up in court. It's a legal thing. You know, you can take money, you suspect money being stolen or diverted. They put a dial on the money and then they put it out there where you can find it. You know, in the Postal Service, Mr. Phillips, Betty's dad, was in the Postal Service for many, many years, and he said occasionally there were envelopes that came through that you knew were cash. And you're handling it. You know it's cash. And he said when envelopes came through and it was obvious that it was cash, it probably meant that somebody's been opening envelopes, taking money and checks out of it, and so they've sent through the mail service an envelope that people who know anything about envelopes, the size and all this, they know it's cash. But this money has been, sprayed with some kind of stain. So that when you open it and you handle the money, put your hand on ultraviolet light and it shines. And these people take the bait. People offer you something that you know is too good to be true. You know, here's an item that costs $500 and they'll sell it to you for $50. And you just look at it and say, boy, it's my good luck. It's hot, folk. More than likely, it's hot. That means it's been stolen. And if you buy it, you say, well, I didn't know any better. Yes, you did, because you know nothing is that cheap. And you can be arrested for receiving stolen goods. It's a trap. It's an enticement. It's bait. Don't take the bait. You say, but you mean just go through life and look at this stuff, but don't touch? Absolutely. You mean when I see that, you better make sure that there's not a hook in it. Let no man say, when he is tempted to sin, God is tempting me to sin. Because God says that isn't true. It is your fault. It is your responsibility. You are to blame for what has happened to you. Strange philosophy in this day and age, but it is what God says. You say, but I was so poverty stricken that when I saw that item, I just had to have it and I stole it. No excuse. No excuse. No excuse. You say, but this person has tons of this and I don't have any. So if I take some, it's my right. No, it is not your right. It is not right to steal. Even if you don't have any and the other guy has a lot, it's still wrong to steal. Isn't that strange? Most of you were taught that, weren't you? Most children today are not taught that. In our school systems, it's situational ethics. It's a new kind of value system they teach. Being taught in our school system, in every school system, that if some guy's got a lot and you don't have much, then you have a right to get some of it, even by lying or stealing, if it is necessary for your well-being. And you wonder why so many people are doing it. James said, take responsibility for your actions. Something falls on you, hey, count it all joy, because God's going to use it, or it can be used by wisdom as a means of growth. But if you take the bait and you sin, don't say it's a temptation, from God.